Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute, on air and online, this is Intersection.
Hello and welcome to Intersection, where people and ideas meet. I'm Reuben Stern. Last week, during his annual State of the State address, Missouri Governor Jay Nixon unveiled his budget plan for the coming fiscal year. Among the many proposals, the governor's budget includes $17 million in increases to funding for early childhood education programs in the state. The move comes as welcome news to many working in that field, who saw early childhood education funding cut by $10 million last year. So, how would the increased state funding in next year's budget be used if it makes it into the final budget? How severe is the need for that additional state support, and how far would that $17 million more go? Joining me in the studio today to help discuss this and make some prognostications, perhaps, Jack Jensen First is the Executive Director of First Chance for Children, which advocates and provides resources related to early childhood development programs. Welcome back to our program, Jack Jensen.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you back in our studio today. Also with us today, Murnell King is the Early Childhood Programs Director for Central Missouri Community Action. She also serves as Board President of the Missouri Head Start Association. Welcome to our program, Murnell King.
Nice to meet you. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you in the studio today as well. Also with us at the table today, Steve Calloway is the President of the Minority Men's Network. His group partners with other organizations to promote education in a variety of age ranges. Steve previously served on Columbia's Board of Education. Welcome to our program, Steve Calloway.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you in the studio with us as well. We hope that those of you in our audience will be a part of our conversation today, too. How important do you think it is for the state of Missouri to fund programs for young children, such as preschool or other early education options? We'd love you to join our conversation. You can give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. And remember, our program is open from 2 to 3 on Monday afternoons. And I want to start with this question. A $17 million increase sounds like a lot. So what exactly does that mean? Jack, maybe you can help us understand that.
Well, $17 million does sound like a lot of money. But when you're spreading that across the state of Missouri, when you're spreading it across, you know, literally tens of thousands of children, while it is nice to have, it really does not go that far.
Right. And how does it compare to the spending that's already going on? Murnell, maybe you could help us with that a little bit.
I can talk at least about the Head Start, early Head Start spending. Last year when we took budget cuts, we basically lost half the funding, a little more than half. We went from about 608 kids being funded to 305.
And is that statewide or just in Missouri?
Statewide.
Here?
That sounds like such a small number of kids, and it's such a comprehensive program, but that's significant because it really impacted local programs, not only having to tell people they were not going to have services, it impacted jobs. You know, I think it's a big jobs issue. And just to give you an idea, I think we had about $5.7 million last year, and we were reduced to 2.65. My program locally, or the Central Missouri Community Action Program, we went from 40 children and families being served to 14. And we had 30 days to tell them they weren't going to have the services anymore. I think, you know, that was a big impact. The numbers seem really small, but it's very expensive to operate these kinds of comprehensive early care and education programs and family development programs. We'll be happy to take the $3.5 million if he can actually, you know, get it passed through the legislature. It would increase totally from the previous number of 608, about 50 more slots.
Right. And now that $3.5 million, how does that compare with the amount that was cut last year?
Well, it was – let me get that right, because I think it was roughly – we went from 5.7 to 2.65, so it's more.
Right.
It's 3.5 versus 2.65.
Right.
So that would, what I was saying was that would increase about by 50 kids more than we had.
Right.
So 658 versus 608.
But it's still a fairly small increase over what was being funded the year before.
And just to put it in a little bit of a perspective, nationally, we have federal funding for Early Head Start, and Missouri's lucky. We have state funding. But nationally, we only are reaching 26,000 children that need it.
And that's across the whole country?
The whole country. And that's only 3% of need.
And how does that compare with what's been going on in the past? I mean, has it always been just a small slice like that?
It's been a small slice like that because Head Start started out really working the 3 to 5-year-old children, getting them prepared in a Head Start ready for school. But we learned, and the statistics on many, many studies show, the earlier we can really work with children, the better outcomes we have, the better prepared they are for school. Those children who have infant toddler care in multiple really great programs, including Early Head Start, when they go to preschool environments at age 3, they are have more literacy experiences, have more mathematic experiences, and those are the kinds of things that we need to get them ready for school.
Right. Now, Steve, you've been nodding the whole time Ernell's been talking here.
Yes. Yeah. First of all, the information that she's providing is fantastic. I'm learning a lot just sitting here and listening to her talk about the numbers around the funding. But the thing that I'm nodding about really is the fact that resonates so much with me and with our organization and what we're trying to do and why we're trying to do what we're trying to do with early childhood education and why we've become big believers and advocates that early childhood education is the best way that we can close the achievement gap.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. What exactly is the Minority Men's Network trying to do, and what are you hoping that will accomplish?
Great. The Minority Men's Network is an organization in our community that's made up of men, mostly that have a good education, that have positions and jobs in our community, or may be retired, that represents leaders in our community. And so the men, our motto, if you will, is improving the lives of others through service. So while we are not any sort of an early childhood provider, I want to make that clear, what we do is that we believe in the value of education. And so what we've tried to do is we've tried to take on projects and activities that span the continuum of our early childhood all the way up through college. So one of the programs that we do in our community is that we are partners with the Nora Stewart Early Learning Center, and we run a reading program. Once a week, we read to kids at around that 4 or 5 age group. We get men from our organization that get in front of those kids and read them 1 or 2 stories and interact with the kids in what we think is a quality preschool education.
Okay. Let me remind our audience, this is an intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about a proposed $17 million increase in state funding for early childhood programs. Joining me in the studio are Jack Jensen, Executive Director for First Chance for Children, Murnell King, Early Childhood Programs Director for Central Missouri Community Action, and Steve Calloway, President of the Minority Men's Network. For those of you in our audience, what do you think of the governor's proposal to increase funding for early childhood programs? You can give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. And we'd like to remind you that Intersection is broadcast live every Monday at 2 on KBIA and online at kbia.org. You can be part of the conversation at that time and watch our video stream by going to kbia.org and following the link for Intersection. Murnell, you said that the funding that comes on a federal level for the Early Head Start program, and that trickles down into Missouri, only covers a very small fraction of the need. Let's talk about that for a second. What exactly is the need? What do these kids need that they're not getting?
I would start with prenatal services and saying that we have a lot of teen moms, first-time moms, that really have very little experience with being a parent. So we do a lot of parenting skills. Early Head Start's really comprehensive. It's not just about what we're doing with children in care. We are making sure that they have all their health needs met, their health requirements met. We're working with families to make sure they have parenting skills that'll strengthen their involvement with their children through school and the rest of their lives. And a lot of the parents that we work with are working families with limited resources. And what I'm going to say, it's going to sound a little off, but I worry where they're staying if they're not in high-quality care. And we know that children coming to us at age 3 are at least a standard deviation behind their peers on average coming in. So they're behind.
So already by age 3.
Already. And we see it over and over and over, and I'm sure Jack and anyone can talk about it too, but we just know that if we can do a little more on the front end, like the wonderful book reading and that, they don't have books in the home. The average Head Start parent makes $12,000 a year or less in a single family home. That's not a lot of money. And so their available care money isn't much. And so sometimes they're really seeking out people that probably aren't the best providers of care to those children. Even though they may have a good heart, they're not developmentally, if you will, challenging them to make them ready. It sounds so young to be starting that kind of thing, but everything a baby does is about being ready. You know, we coo at the babies. We talk to the babies. I just read an article this morning that said in the families in the most abject poverty, they really don't understand the language needs of their babies. In other words, they're not talking to them like we would really encourage, or they don't have the money to have books, or they're not reading to them. So that makes a real literacy challenge for us at even age 3.
Some of the research that is just coming out, you know, we learn how to measure what kids are learning, the things that we can do now with brain scans, et cetera. The research about what happens with that child from birth to 3 is just incredible. And it's new stuff, stuff we didn't know 5, 10 years ago. That's when 90% of the physical development, the neurons being formed, occur for that child. And the brain grows by being stimulated. If it's not stimulated, that's where you get that standard deviation behind by age 3. One of the things that I've seen is 90% of our brain development occurs in this very early window period of time. That's where we spend 10% of the money when it comes to education. We spend the other 90% once this growth spurt of brain development has already occurred. And when we have limited resources, we need to make sure they're being used at the time when it can make the greatest difference.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. How does a state expenditure translate into addressing the problem? Like, where does the money go, and how does it how is it made sure that that's going to help address what you just articulated?
Well, there are a number of programs. There's Parents as Teachers, which is very helpful for that teen mom or that first time that a family is having a child. You know, children do not come with that owner's manual like your new car does, unfortunately. So that would be one type of program.
Now, that program was quite popular here in mid-Missouri, right? And it got cut back?
Actually, it was. Yeah.
It did?
Yeah. Started by Senator Bond, who's now, of course, retired when he was a governor. About 3-4 years ago, it experienced a 60% cut.
And what's going on with that now? Would that be increased again under what the governor is proposing?
It was increased slightly last year by a couple million dollars. I think they're right up there around $15 million now. Again, the whole state of Missouri, every kid could benefit from this service, birth to, you know, 5. So you can see that money is spread very, very thin. But there is discussion about that being improved and additional funding.
Okay. And I stopped you. You were going to list off some other ways that the state spending translates into helping kids at an early age.
Well, we talk about monitoring quality of programs through whether it's the licensing of centers to make sure they're safe. Murnell was touching on you may be putting your child in the care of that grandma down the street that's just got a wonderful heart. Yeah. But really does not have the background to do the things that should be going on with that child. And then when you talk about the money aspect of it, the numbers of children that are in that setting could be very high to where there's just not the time for the adult to spend with each child. So that is one aspect of state programming.
And the numbers that I saw say that $3.5 million of what the governor is proposing would be an increase directly for that, right, for child care service Quality Improvement and Accreditation Assistance is kind of how it's listed, right?
And that is replacing the $3.5 million that was cut last year from those programs. So you had those programs operating last year. The money was cut. The people were let go. And now $3.5 million to basically ramp up that program again. There was another little over $3.5 million for something called Startup and Expansion Funding that was not replaced in this budget. First Chance for Children served 25 child care facilities that were wanting to get started and help them move towards quality and licensing. That was not restored, and that directly affected 625 kids in this community. That's not talking about the statewide impact.
Here, meaning this community, meaning Boone County specifically?
Yes, that would be correct.
Right. Are there other ways that the funding gets translated into program work that actually helps?
Well, I think we do a really good job of partnering with other providers. I mean, we're very closely aligned with our parents as teachers. Our staff actually are certified in parents as teachers. We've worked with Jack and his program. When we can, we leverage those kinds of funds so that they go further. But with Early Head Start in particular, and that's what I know the most about, most of our slots, if you will, for Early Head Start State are in child care partners. And the idea there was we were enhancing quality there. We are federally monitored, and the monitoring that came in for us federally also monitored the state programs.
And what does that mean that you mentioned partners in there? What exactly is it paying for?
It pays for the child care services of the partner. However, we would bring in, as Jack was saying, you know, you have to have quality initiatives and quality things happening. A lot of times we would have certain requirements that the child care center, even though licensed, might not have. To bring it to our standards, we had to go in with upfront money. It was a way of also putting funding in there for quality enhancement and perhaps helping more children in that center. So we would go in, maybe we redid the playground because it wasn't up to the standard that Head Start nationally would have. And when the Early Head Start State became a part of the early heads or the state mix for early childhood, they worked with the federal government out of Kansas City in our region to design it so it would mirror it. I think that that's awesome that we were working with child care partners because it wasn't just us and we weren't trying to take their children. You know, we were trying to improve quality. There's many ways to do that. That's just one that we did. One thing I really wanted to share was that I feel like, you know, we really need to start talking about for the dollar we put into these programs now, what is the cost benefit later? Because it's so tremendous, it's unbelievable. I was reading stats this morning in preparation, you know, today, and it's a child who goes through early Head Start, through Head Start, and then goes into the public school and is on grade level when they reach kindergarten will, on average, make $9,000 more a year than their peers that were in the similar income situation, making it to school and having, you know, just that, and also graduating. I mean, that's just really huge. And we know there's all kinds of studies, but basically for a dollar, you'll get anywhere from $7 to $10 return on investment. In Missouri, we're working in a partnership at the prison, the women's prison in Vandalia. We see girls in there that have their babies, and they're still going to go back to those babies, but they're not there with them in prison. So we're working with the babies out in the community and working with the moms in prison. And every child that does not have to have a parent incarcerated saves us as taxpayers. $29,000 a year is roughly what it's costing that incarceration. So take 29,000 times the 15 moms we're working with. That's a huge. So I'd like to have the money on our end,
right?
You know, working it and working with mom so she understands. And I just think that the partnerships, I'm really glad to meet you. And Jack and I have talked numerous times, but I really think that if we can leverage where we can, that's the best approach because the state then sees that we're working together. We're not trying to usurp or stand over somebody else's program. But we all have different outcomes to achieve. And right. I think, you know, ultimately we'll – We'll do well if we can do that.
Let me remind our audience real fast that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about a proposed increase in state funding for early childhood programs and what that might mean. Joining me in the studio are Jack Jensen, Executive Director for First Chance for Children, Murnell King, Early Childhood Programs Director for Central Missouri Community Action, and Steve Calloway, President of the Minority Men's Network. For those of you in our audience, if you participated or were a beneficiary of the Parents as Teachers program, we'd love to hear what that meant for you and how that helped. So give us a call. Our phone number is 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. Jack?
Murnell was talking about the partnership they have with the prisons. One of our biggest supporters is the director of prisons here in the state of Missouri. Lombardi? Am I getting his name right?
Mr. Lombardi, yes.
When the governor, his very first meeting this second term, was on the topic of early childhood education. And as I understand it, Mr. Lombardi invited himself to that meeting so he could be a part of that discussion. We have some very interesting partners, as Murnell was talking about, groups in the community like Steve. But you can go to Google and type in generals in support of preschool. They actually have their own organization that are pushing the importance of early childhood because they're seeing so few kids getting to the age of military service, able to serve because of either physical issues or they didn't pass high school. Those are some of the things that get in the way of that. Police chiefs and sheriffs across the nation see the importance of taking care of the child early. Makes their lives easier down the road.
Well, let me ask you this, Steve. Your organization realized that this was something it wanted to focus its energies on. What was it like trying to get into a place where you could be helpful as an organization? What did you see going on in the landscape that that was interesting?
I think probably the first thing for us is that our organization is made up mostly of African-American men. And so there are a couple of perspectives that we bring to that. First of all, being African-American, and then secondly, being males. And so depending on what information you read, whether you look at Michelle Alexander's book and the data around who's in the prison population and who it is that's failing in our educational system, certainly poverty is an important part of that, but race is also intersected with that as well. And so one of the things for us that was kind of a no-brainer, being men ourselves who were beneficiaries of good education and support as we went along, was that we needed to focus on little black kids that sometimes start behind the eight ball. And again, at Nora Stewart, when we go and read to the kids there, I want to emphasize there are all kinds of kids there. There is the population of kids there are extremely diverse. But all that just says to us is that that type of program is needed in our community. And so part of what we saw out of Nora Stewart is that Nora Stewart, first of all, is the oldest nursery school. It was first established in 1933. It was the first nursery school in Columbia that was established for African-American kids to be able to attend. And so it has a rich tradition of serving the population of families and kids that we are very concerned about and that we look at as one of our greatest assets. And so it was a no-brainer for us to work with that particular organization, and getting in there and working with those kids has just been a delight to see how and in what way we can influence those kids. And we felt it was extremely important to get African-American males demonstrating a love of reading, because reading is one of those things that when you ask folks in prison, they weren't good readers. Yeah. When you look at kids who aren't successful in the public schools, they're not good readers. And reading is so fundamental for just about everything that you do. So we were very strongly motivated to get to work and do what we could to be role models in the school.
Let me ask you this. What is your sense of the perception of the families who are potential beneficiaries of these programs, of things like what you do versus the kinds of programs that Murnell administers?
Mm-hmm. First of all, I don't want to in any kind of way stereotype the families that are at Nora Stewart. However, one of the things we know about Nora Stewart is that they have a sliding scale when it comes to how families can afford to go to that school. And so certainly finances is a big part of why that school exists and the need that that particular school meets. So it's really important for us that those are the families and those are the kids who are most at risk, or as I like to call it, most at promise when it comes to what they are able to accomplish with just a little bit of help.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important. That's a place where they can receive extra help. The kids being there, they're getting a high-quality education. And we just want to try to be a small part of that high-quality education.
Right. And what about the parents that you deal with, Marnell? I mean, how do they approach these things? You come in and say, you don't know how to raise your baby. We're going to help you.
And it's not like that at all, of course. I think, by and large, all families want the best for their kids.
Absolutely.
They want more than they had. We've got all kinds of challenges. We've got money, economics, no jobs, all kinds of things. And I really applaud what you guys are doing. I think that we do a 100-man lunch every year, and that's huge, and we try to bring in community gentlemen to work with the kids. I think a lot of times men in early childhood, this is awesome because it kind of is swept under the rug. Oh, that's a woman's thing to do. And no, it isn't. The stats really are there that if a male is in the life of a child, a good male role model, they're going to do better in high school. They're going to have a better chance of graduating. And their success rates in life are just there. I can't speak to which study it is, but I definitely have read them. And we work hard at that, too. I think that we have a lot of kids that have gone to Nora Stewart for aftercare and so forth and so on. And as I was talking about earlier, just for the wraparound services, we can't be all things to all people, and we can't cover all the kids that need it. We have, right now, 200 children on our waiting list for Head Start and over 100 for early Head Start. So we're never going to get them all. And I'm sure Nora does, too, and everybody does.
And how do you decide which of the people on that waiting list are going to get helped? Because that's a daunting task, right?
Yeah, that's a really big challenge. But we have to have, by federal regulation, a priority selection criteria. And it's all blind. It runs through a computer and it spits out who's top, who's next. And it's based on a lot of social determinants.
Like, so what does that mean?
It might be that if you're a single mom, you might have a higher number in a point system. And so when we get a list, it doesn't say what the child's name is. It just says who is the top, who's next, who's next, who's
next. What are some of the other factors? Single mom being one of them. What else would propel someone higher up on the list?
Homelessness. State of Missouri has served 1,400 homeless children this year in Head Start. I think that's pretty amazing, and that's McKinney-Vento definition, which is what the public schools use as well. We have a lot of children that are in single-parent homes, mom-raised kind of homes, where we really want to work with them and have an opportunity for them to have the good male role models and so forth. We also have a lot of children that are in really rural areas, and they don't have access to the kinds of supports we do here in Columbia. You know, they might not even be, and I know you serve a lot of kids in the rural areas. They don't have the opportunity to go down the street and join the club that may not cost them anything and so forth and so on. So we try to bridge some of those gaps within the community too.
You know, one that I found interesting is whether one of the parents is deployed in the military.
Yeah, that's another one.
And in this day and age, that's a huge one,
yes.
Whether mom or dad is serving not only one tour of duty, but in some cases three, four tours of duty. Mm-hmm. So it really it benefits the whole society. And when I go back to the military aspect of it, when you begin to look at how much a soldier makes, and then what they have to spend on quality child care, it can eat up anywhere from 34 to 44% of their budget. And that's the same battle that everybody else is fighting out there.
That's right.
Wow. Okay, reminder for everyone, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about a proposed increase in state funding for early childhood programs and what that might mean across the state of Missouri. Joining me in the studio are Jack Jensen, Executive Director for First Chance for Children, Marnell King, Early Childhood Programs Director for Central Missouri Community Action, and Steve Calloway, President of the Minority Men's Network. We're going to take a quick break, but you can join our conversation too. Our phone number, 573-882-8925. So give us a call, share your thoughts, and stick around. We'll be right back after the short break. And welcome back. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about a proposed increase in state funding for early childhood programs. Joining me in the studio are Jack Jensen, Executive Director for First Chance for Children, Murnell King, Early Childhood Programs Director for Central Missouri Community Action, and Steve Calloway, President of the Minority Men's Network. For those of you in our audience, do you have ideas for ways to help make sure young children get off to a good start? If so, we'd love to hear your ideas, so give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org or go online to kbia.org and follow the link for Intersection, where you can join our online chat, and you can watch the video of today's program as we have this conversation. I want to kind of walk through real fast the exact dollar amounts that the governor is proposing and make sure we explain clearly what exactly he's asking for. Obviously, this is still set up to go through the legislature over the next several months. But the biggest chunk of this is not actually what we're talking about so far. The biggest chunk is $10 million for a Missouri preschool program. What does that mean? I have no idea.
Well, the Missouri preschool program was a program established in, I'm not sure how many years ago, over 10, to supply support to school districts to establish quality programs either in a school district setting, or they could be working out with private providers in the community. The grants were to be for 5 years to establish these programs, expanding the number of quality preschools. They got in trouble a little bit because they were going more than 5 years. And last year, that programming was cut. When I was the assistant superintendent of elementary education here, we had a Missouri preschool program. And the money that we used year in, year out, supplied quality programming for those children. It allowed us to do things that we could not have done without it. The governor has expanded that to an additional $10 million. And so it will be to set up quality preschools around the state.
And what's going on with that in Mid-Missouri now? Is that program still going on in the Columbia Public Schools?
It is. I think Columbia will probably have to not close the program, but they will lose that funding. They will have to find other ways to support that.
And I might weigh in a little bit.
Yeah, please, Marnell.
And for our program, we currently partner with an MPP, Missouri Preschool Program, at Ladonia, Missouri's community R6, and over time they were experiencing the same thing. They were getting less and less funding as they were supposed to each year, and they came to us, and so we're in there with them. So while we're not providing all the funding, we're providing two teachers that are educated and certified, and all the programs shifting a little bit of money each year to us versus them. So they're paying less and less out of pocket, but they're giving us supports we wouldn't have otherwise been able to have there. The building, the room, the other, infrastructural support.
And when you say us, do you mean the federal Head Start program, or you mean Central Missouri Community Action?
Missouri Community Action for that particular program is using federal dollars to support half the cost in that program. Right now, I would say it's not even half. It's probably more like three-fourths of the cost is coming out of our budget. But we're in the school. That school literally is in a cornfield. I always laugh about it, but it's but it's true. We took federal reviewers there, and they're like, that's where it is. There's no town. And it's like, no, but that has to be there. It has to be that way. Yeah. And again, talking about leveraging our resources together is going to make, hopefully, that MPP, it may not be called an MPP Head Start, maybe called the child care center there, but hopefully it will help preserve it once that state funding goes to some other place.
That's a really good example that people need to know about. We're always looking for those partners, yeah. And you touched on that. And probably the perfect example here in Columbia is the Park Avenue preschool. Yeah. And that's a partnership of Columbia Public Schools through their Title I. Mm-hmm. With Head Start, and then the Housing Authority supplies the building. And there's the programs that I'm involved in now, we're always finding that other group to work with so that we can make the dollars go as far as possible.
Mm-hmm. And to add one to it, he was so instrumental in getting that done, so I thank you, Jack. But I know now we have an infant toddler room in there, which is helping the Douglas students stay in school. So we saw that need. Okay, we really need to do infant toddler work right here, so they're right back there.
What do you mean by that? Are there children of Douglas students who are in that infant toddler center?
We have 8 infant toddler slots in that building, which Jack said is a partnership between us, the public school, and also the building and housing. And then there's a 45 3- to 5-year-olds. So some of those teen moms, not a many, but a few, have a 3-year-old and an infant. So they're right there, right behind where they're going to school.
Right. It raises a lot of questions, but I want to keep working through these dollar figures from the governor's proposal, and then we can come back to some of these other things. So $10 million was for the preschool program, $3.5 million for Early Head Start, which we've talked a little bit about as well. And these are increases over last year, so restoring some of that funding. $3.5 million for child care quality improvement and accreditation. We talked a little bit about that as well already, in terms of that being mostly a restoration of funds that had been cut. And then there was another thing in his budget that was listed as $1.5 million for First Steps program, an increase into what's being spent on the First Steps program. And maybe you can give us a little bit of information about
Jack.
Why don't you just say what that program is?
Well, the First Steps program is a Part C program of the state of Missouri, and it works with infants and toddlers who have developmental delays. And they provide case management services and other therapies and so forth in-home to children with special needs, identified special needs. And First Steps did take a cut a while back, and we have a number of children. We're required to serve 10% of children with special needs, documented special needs every year. And we have 13-14% of infants and toddlers. So I'm glad to see that coming back. I think it's much needed, and I think schools will be happy that it's coming back because they work with them in those early years, and they transition from an IFSP, an Individualized Family Support Plan, to the IEP process when they get to age 3.
And one thing that should be noted there, in all of these programs that we're talking about, the vast majority of them have a waiting list.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what your Douglas waiting list is, but I'm assuming it's huge. Mm-hmm. I put a proposal together to try to serve in a PAT model all the counties around Boone and literally identified thousands of families that would qualify for services, have risk factors that would qualify for services that are not currently being served. If we were to get the program that I'm talking about, we'd still only serve a drop in the bucket of that group. But I'm kind of hoping that it might become a model program that it would be looked at to be expanded.
Right. That sort of answers a question I was going to ask you, which is, so the families who are eligible for these programs, they know about these programs, yes or no? Or I mean, how is that going?
Well, I'll say that yes and no. I think word of mouth is our best referral process. However, first-time parents, like Jack was saying, they don't come with the little tag, what to do, who to call if this or that is happening. They may not have had experience in poverty, special needs child, whatever. They don't know really where to go. And so we do have to have unique ways to recruit, and we have to have unique ways to find kids.
And how do parents find this information? Like if a parent right now was listening to this program, where would they go to find out what they might be able to apply for?
Well, first chance for children.
That's a really good question.
We're in the book.
Yeah.
Voluntary Action Center is excellent about referring folks to us, and when we cannot supply the service, referring them on to other places. The phone system, 211, I think I've got that right, is a place where people can call and ask about different services that might be available. And the thing that I would say is the families that we are serving, these are families that are hardworking, often have several jobs. It's just hard to make a living these days. And you've got this child, and we take care of the child now. It makes so many things so much easier down the road, especially if that child gets to kindergarten ready to learn.
I think we're lucky in our community here in Columbia and in Boone County in particular. I do think people know who we are, and I think we have good partners in that. Like you said, the voluntary action, you guys refer to us or vice versa, or to the different child care partners. But I do think it's challenging for that first-time parent. I really do. If they've had no supports to know where. You know, they might go to the phone book, but they don't even know who to call.
Right.
And there are parents that, and we've been talking in my particular case about really low-income families. there are families that are really struggling, that are just losing jobs and have been middle class, and we've gotten calls off the wall, can you take our kids? And the answer is no. I mean, because we've got so many kids that are going to be income eligible first.
And what if you move a ring or two out to the counties around Boone County? I mean, we're lucky because Columbia is a fairly big area, city within our county here in Boone. But what about those outlying counties? How connected are people who live there to services?
I think they're connected to people. And then I think the people know about the services. Some of our Head Start center managers, if you will, they are so well known in their community. They just know she's the lady that watches the kids. So they might call her up, you know, or whatever. I mean, it is really neighborhood by neighborhood. I like to think of all the stuff we've been talking about today as really place-based. You have to, like, look at how a recruitment would look like in Chemung, Missouri versus Columbia. We might send a lot more flyers out through the school district. In Columbia, all the children that go to our program have been screened by the public school. I mean, so we're already connected. The Nora Stewart folks, you know, we've sent people there for aftercare, or maybe we just can't serve them. So I do think we kind of have a network.
But in those outlying counties, there just aren't the services.
No, they're not.
That's
absolutely
just the bottom line, whether we're talking about their PAT program or quality preschool. In so many communities, it just does not exist.
And would any of this funding increase that the governor's proposing help address any of that, or is it just incremental all across everywhere?
Incremental across everywhere, sure. It will be helpful. But again, it's just a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, I looked at some information, and there was a report by the National Institute of Early Childhood Education Research, and they noted in 2011 that Missouri at that time was 32nd out of 50 states in spending on early childhood education, and that was before the cuts. So I've heard numbers like that we're 35th. I've heard also that along the same lines, other states increased their funding for early childhood education. And so, I mean, that's kind of typical of Missouri, is that we don't, the spending on higher education, spending on elementary education, the 9,000 some dollars that we spend for K through 12 education. If you talk about the dollars, what we spend on that compared to what it costs to incarcerate somebody, that's the economic issue. That's the whole big deal about why this is important and why it's such a good investment. It's the best investment we can make compared to what we could spend and are spending the money on now. One of the things, and I don't want to get you away from talking about what the individual dollar amounts will do, but part of what we found with the early childhood education programs is that it's not as much the academic part of it. Yes, it helps prepare kids for school, but when you look at the character aspects of kids that have gone through these programs, those kids are head and shoulders above kids that haven't gone through these kinds of programs. And finally, you mentioned about how do families and stuff find out about this, the alums of these programs. Families go back, and as other kids, great-grandkids come along, they remember the experience they have with these programs, and they want to send their kids to these programs.
Okay. We have a caller on the line. I want to bring you into the conversation. Dave from Columbia, are you there?
Yes, I am. Darren Linnell, how are you? Dave Rossman.
Oh, hi, Dave. How are you?
I know that whole crew.
Great.
Hey, I do have a question, though, and the question is this. The governor's budget is only proposed. There are at least two, probably four different Senate bills alone that are looking to cut taxes, which means that there will be less money available. So what are the contingency plans if the money is not available through the governor's proposed budget?
Yeah, a good question.
Well, unfortunately, I think the majority of us are just to the point where we have to make cuts. We do our partners. We try to, you know, stretch the dollar as far as we possibly can. I would welcome anybody to come over to any one of our shops to see how we're trying to be just as frugal as we possibly can be with those dollars. But you are correct. There are at least three bills, if not four, that are talking about budget cuts in the state. And one thing that, as Missourians, we need to realize we're a very low tax, state. I'm not remembering the exact number, but we're in the 40s somewhere as when you compare us. I don't want to be number one when it comes to being taxed. No way. But, you know, I'm not so sure I would mind being 32nd in the nation when it comes to what we're paying in taxes, when it comes to supplying services that in the long run are going to pay benefits. When that child doesn't graduate from high school, that child's not available for the job that the company wants to bring to Missouri. That's the first thing that companies look at. Do we have an educated workforce? The best way to make sure we've got an educated workforce is to make sure that kid gets to kindergarten ready to learn.
Well, let me ask you this, and then David, I'm going to give you a chance to follow up too. So if the very first years are so instrumental in getting a kid out of high school, why not shift money from K through 12 education into these early programs? Do you think that would fly?
No.
it's
hard enough to convince people that we need to spend money. Most people think of school starts at kindergarten and goes through 12th grade. And they just don't – we really have got to change our societal mindset about, again, if the kid doesn't get to kindergarten ready to learn, the problems that that causes – I'll be very brief on this. One study I'm looking at is if we were to expand preschool, how much money would we save on retention? Because we know kids that get to kindergarten are not as retained as much. One number I saw is that $83 million of our state budget is put behind kids that are retained every year. So there is the possibility of some tax savings, but we've got to get them to kindergarten first.
Right. I mean, not to hammer the point, but couldn't you just move that $83 million into these programs and ideally have it work?
And as an old educator that was trying to move those money around, for me it was back with Title I dollars, which we could spend on preschool, or what do you do about that kid that's in third grade and can't read? It's a really tough balancing act.
Right. David, I wanted to give you a chance to follow up.
No, I mean, that's one of the big problems that we do have. When we look at early childhood pre-K education, it's not only exceptionally important for the kid to be able to succeed, but it's also important for the family, not just that child's family, but the child's future family, because education is ongoing. And I know Murnell and Darren would agree with this. These are not programs at CMCA that are designed for those who can afford to send their child to a private pre-K education. This is for people who can't afford that, for the people that are really on the borderline. And Darryl and Darren and Murnell, you may want to discuss that a little bit also.
I was just sitting here thinking about how many children we're spending money on, not only for reading recovery and programs such as that, but I have seen in my almost 20-year career in Head Start an ever-increasing number of children who have significant behavioral concerns. So when they go to the classroom and we don't have any programming for them, what are we going to do? Have a classroom in kindergarten just for kids who can't do kindergarten? It really is very concerning. A lot of our children do not have their immunizations up to date. They do not have a dental exam yet. And so many factors affect the whole child. And I'm sitting here thinking, maybe we should look at, too, not just talking about early care for the low-income families, but on a continuum. You know, everybody needs good relationship development in that. All children, you know, are they getting it? Do they have opportunities to play with others if their mom's staying home with them? I think all of that is very important, and we need a continuum. We need to really assess where this money goes and how it's going. And we have to be really more in the face of people, which we're not very good at, especially me, about the funding. I mean, we're going to pay it. And we're not going to have more taxes because they're not going to be working if we don't do something. I think we're kind of at a critical mass. I really do.
David, before I thank you and let you go, I just want to make sure you referred to Darren, and I'm guessing you mean Darren Priest, who works with Murnell at CMCA, right? Okay. Well, Dave, thank you very much for calling in and joining the conversation today.
Hey, excellent. I appreciate your work over there.
You know, Murnell was talking about the social emotion and the behavioral issues. Mm-hmm. And again, the research that has just come out in the last couple of years, the executive function, they call it, that is what is developed when that child is in that good preschool setting. And we say preschool, the home setting, if that's it. But we have to realize that we no longer live in a society where there's, you know, two parents with one of them staying at home. There's got to be that quality programming. And if we miss it in that birth to three range and then on four and five, the cost is just so great to make up for it. That's one of the things that we need to think about. One thing I would say is there is some legislation going through the Senate. It's been introduced by Senator Keveney out of St. Louis, calling for universal voluntary preschool. Now, the funding issue is the question. But if I would have been sitting here 3 years ago and you would have said, Jack, what about legislation for this? I would have said, I don't see anything on the horizon. Those conversations are beginning to be had at the highest level, and that's good to see.
Okay, let me remind our audience one more time. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about proposed increases in state funding for early childhood programs and what that might mean. Joining me in the studio are Jack Jensen, Executive Director for First Chance for Children, Murnell King, Early Childhood Programs Director for Central Missouri Community Action, and Steve Calloway, President of the Minority Men's Network. For those of you in our audience, we have a few minutes left. If you'd like to share your experience or ideas, we'd love to have you as part of the conversation. You can also ask questions of our panelists. Our phone number here, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org or join our online chat by going to kbia.org and following the link for Intersection. Jack, in terms of the funding part of this, I mean, I want to go back a second to something that we were talking about in terms of the idea of this kind of spending on preschool programs, early childhood programs as a preventative measure. Right. Is this something that, you know, if the state legislature were to allocate money for the next 4 years, that after that we potentially could cut those dollars out of other education spending and see this being a temporary expenditure rather than a permanent growth of what the state funds?
Well, I think what you would see is the money that is being spent on additional special education, retention, remediation programs. Once we got the majority of kids there to kindergarten ready to learn, then we'd be able to shift that money into preschool programs. It's not that the money, you would have to fund it year after year for the quality preschool, but you would be able to remove other money that, again, we spend a lot of money on remedial education in math, reading, etc. We spend money for behavioral classrooms, etc. If those things were not needed, then that money would become free to support other programs.
Steve, I want to ask you about this. I mean, your organization is working on a program that doesn't receive federal money to establish it. It's people volunteering to help out kids who need it. What do you see as the potential for that instead of more tax dollars being spent?
Great question. excuse me. So, yes, part of what I've been seeing when I look out in the educational landscape, we've kind of been working on a project that's kind of centered on collective impact. Mm-hmm. There's an organization in Cincinnati that's been working on this. Strive is what it is. So we've kind of been working on that. And the idea is that whether you use the old cliche that it takes a village or you just say, you know what, it's not just about throwing money at something. It's really about getting efforts in a coordinated fashion that will really make a difference and really establish some accountability within our community for the outcomes of what happens with our kids. So to respond to the question of the what do we spend and is there a way that we can bring resources to this that don't require extra taxes, that don't require a whole lot of funding, I think we still need resources brought. But I think more of the resources that we need are resources where people who are of goodwill, People want to volunteer. People want to come to school and read. People who want to help kids wherever they are. Businesses in the business community. I think there's a lot of investment that's available in the business community that could really help with this. And I think what I've been saying is that they're a big driver across the nation of making the economic and the financial case for why they as a business should do this, and that why in our communities it's important that it's not something that you just say, well, that's the school's problem.
Right.
You know, we already understand from a poverty standpoint and all that, that it really is about our community and how we give people jobs and how in our jobs we support families who want to take care of their kids, who need time off to go do different things. So I think it's really much, much more about a collective right. impact kind of effort where everybody gets on board and really understands how this thing works and how it's all interrelated, and how regardless of you know, funding or money or whatever it is, that there is a way that they can have an impact on this problem.
You hinted at a couple of these things, but what specifically would you want to see people doing that would help address these problems that we're talking about in terms of, you know, kids at the very early stages not having the stable home environment that they need, and also just getting their brains engaged in those first few years?
I would say, there's the impact on kids, yes. And I think part of it is that I would love to see businesses help provide some funding in part of salaries for early childhood care for families, for people that are working who need extra help. So what if a family doesn't qualify for some of this? There are lots of people, as we kind of push things down and we cut things and we cut food things and all these different things that are in the national spotlight, it makes it harder for families. And when things happen to families, those things happen to kids. And so support that businesses can provide, providing support for parents who need to go get off work and go see about their kids, or maybe they want to go to school and help read.
Right.
Maybe they want to do those kinds
Interesting.
Of things.
What I'm hearing, you're not articulating this, but are you suggesting something like, you know, we get health insurance, a lot of us, as a benefit for working for a company, that childcare would be something like that? Is that what you're suggesting?
That would be a great idea. I haven't totally thought through.
That's kind of what popped in my mind as you were describing that. But.
And again, the thing is that it would have to be quality early childhood education. So I wouldn't just favor early, you know, daycare. Because some say, well, let's put in a daycare at work. Well, that's great. Put in a daycare, but let it be quality early childhood education.
Right.
You know, one thing I might
say. Just we have a couple of seconds.
Okay. So. Our business community did step up and make one of their key priorities the full funding of early childhood programming as it is in statute. I was very pleased with what our Chamber of Commerce did this last session.
Okay. Unfortunately, we're going to have to stop there because we're running out of time. I'd like to thank our guests today, Jack Jensen, Executive Director for First Chance for Children, Murnell King, Early Childhood Programs Director for Central Missouri Community Action, and Steve Calloway, President of the Minority Men's Network in Columbia. We'd like to remind those of you enjoying this as a rebroadcast that Intersection takes place live for a full hour from 2 to 3 every Monday. You can join us each Monday afternoon by listening to KBIA or by going online to kbia.org and following the link for Intersection. There you'll be able to watch a video feed of our program, submit your questions and comments, and participate in an online chat with others in the audience. You'll also find a video archive of all of our past programs, including the full hour of today's conversation. Intersection is broadcast from the Reynolds Journalism Institute and is a project of RJI and KBIA. Today's program was produced by Raymond Tungekar and Vanita Rizvich. Travis McMillan is our technical director with production assistance from Eric Stazak. Pat Akers is our audio producer. I'm Ruben Stern. I'd like to thank you for joining us. Have a great week.